Hey guys, this is Cole Weicker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I got a problem and it's complicated. Going through change that I just can't ignore the signs. There now, it's so loud it hurts. Hear me, fell, hear me, how it hurts.
And one final touch to be had.
Everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight on the radio. You are listening to the Unused Substitutes show. We are your green and gold gospel, the best source for year-round Rowdies coverage, coming to you live on Radio St. Pete Online, part of the Beautiful Game Network. We are presented in part by Roughneck Scarves and Taco Bus. My name's Stephen Cundiff. We have a full crew. Joining me tonight, of course, is Daniel Undanino and Matthew Cock. Gentlemen, how are you doing this evening?
I think I'm doing all right. I'm here.
I'm doing pretty good. I want to go ahead and say good evening to Connor Antley for no reason at all.
I feel like there's a story that I'm missing. So if you're in the audience listening and you don't get that reference, you're not alone.
You know who does get that reference?
Don't worry, Connor gets it.
Connor gets it. Of course. Yeah. No, of course. Of course. Well, everybody, it is the last preseason show because the big kickoff for 2022 is coming up this Sunday at Birmingham.
Another, that state is so far behind that we have to start the season a day late.
True.
Can we really sit in Florida and take shots at other states?
Yes.
Can we really?
No, that's what makes it funny. It's not punching down to anybody. We're punching up. We're punching. This is what comedy is about.
It's a lateral punch. We just struck an arm out at a 90-degree angle, and there's Alabama.
We have nothing to lose by lashing out at every state. It's perfectly fine. This is the natural state of being by being a Floridian.
Actually, that gif is the coyote cutting the rest of the country off from us. Get it right.
Oh, man. Well, this does not happen without, of course, our amazing Patreon executive producer level supporters. Tonight, the honorary executive producer is David Morales. And as always, we have appreciated every one of you guys for the longtime support of the show, and it helps us make this thing happen. So we do appreciate that. We do appreciate the love. If you want to send us a tweet, give us a thought, a comment, banter with us a little bit, whatever, Twitter is the best place to go to get immediate reactions. Our handle is at Unused Subs Pod. That's the mothership. That is the best place to reach us any day of the week if you want to just kind of get some thoughts or have some conversation. The Rowdies have wrapped up their preseason. This past weekend, it was a 1-1 draw against Tormenta. Bit of a fun little season ticket holder open event there. We had a chance to do, of course, a kind of a warm-up for the preseason show. It was interesting because I don't know if anybody actually saw it technically at all, except if you were like actually there at the game. But
there were two young ladies like three rows up who definitely caught most of Leo's interview with us and got really excited when they realized there was a player sitting in front of them instead of just these three weird guys.
They also thought Leo was Seba. But I mean, I'm glad they got to catch the show.
Baby steps, baby steps.
Oh man. Oh, there's that good old Rowdy's fan base. I didn't say that. Okay. So
to be fair, they're like 12.
Yeah. I was going to say they were like 10 or 12. They okay, weren't, you
okay,
know,
good,
like,
good. The good news is not a lot of takeaways from that. Obviously it's a preseason match. It is the last one before the game, but before the big shebang starts, but it quit, you know, you don't know how much of that's experimental lineups. I mean, the brief summary that we'll provide, because we're not going to go hugely in depth into this match, is that it did look like the Rowdies were playing a 3-4-3. So that might be something that we'll talk about as we're previewing Birmingham in the upcoming season here, because that's going to certainly be of note. Other than that, it was pretty much a standard fair game. Nothing egregious that we could see in particular to report on. With maybe the exception of a new face. If you weren't there or weren't following on Twitter or anything, there is a new body on the roster. Well, do we say on the roster yet? I don't even know if we can say on the roster, but he was there.
He played the game
real quick.
I mean, I'm assuming he's on the roster.
I would hope. Based on what we were told, it sounds like it, but it is strange that we're like 3 days, 4 days away from kickoff for the season and there hasn't been an official announcement, so, you know, it's good times. Like I said, good
mystery player.
Nobody got hurt, so we're all good. It's kind of a, like I said, standard fair preseason game. That's the important thing. So we're going to focus tonight instead on looking forward as the last game before this long 22 season starts. Yeah, there you go. We have brought back a fun guest, a friendly face for those of us on the video call. John Morrissey from at USL Tactics is here with us tonight. He is going to help us kind of break down what he sees with the Rowdies and what we're going to be potentially looking at across the league, potentially, whether East Coast, West Coast, whatever. It's all about the future right now. That's what we're focused on. John, welcome tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, of course. I love talking the league. Obviously had some tie up with the Rowdies last year, so excited to be back on the show tonight.
All right, so let's jump right into it. So the Tampa Bay Rowdies for the last couple seasons have been very consistently playing 3-5-2s. As a base formation, that's what Neil's bread and butter has been. And this year, the preseason so far has kind of shifted faces a little bit. It kind of almost looks like we're going to probably play a 3-4-3, maybe, if Neil's feeling comfortable. The big question, of course, is going to be is, can the Rowdies actually pull this off? That's the big question right now. Because we've been very consistent with a 3-5-2. Is there really... Let's put it this way. From a tactics perspective, is there an obvious advantage the 3-4-3 has over a 3-5-2 in general? With the way that Neil plays a 3-5-2, that you could see that being an advantage switching that up for this upcoming season?
So if you're a Tampa team that is spending so much of the game in the opposing team's half of the field with the ball in dangerous areas, having that extra man up in the forward line just creates a little bit more pressure when you're thinking about how the opposing defense is going to react. So say you've got that band of three players, somebody can make a run wide and you've still got two threats in the box. Versus with that 3-5-2 where somebody makes that same run, you're still dragging a defender out of shape, but there's just less options to be playing into closer to goal. At the same time, given what the Rowdies do defensively, I don't think that they're going to suffer a ton from this approach as well, especially because of the personnel who are probably going to line up in that 3-4-3. Thinking about like a Jake LaCava who has experience basically playing as a box-to-box center midfielder with a New York Red Bulls team that was up and down the pitch constantly because they weren't very good. He's someone who has the work rate to fill in where you're not going to lose out on that side of the ball, but you're just gaining a little bit more verve, a little bit more optionality with what you're doing in the attack.
Obviously, a change in formation is one thing, but changes of personnel on top of that is another. We've mentioned Jake LaCava. He has had a pretty exceptional preseason so far. A lot of people that have had a chance to see this this team play so far are really excited about what he's going to be potentially bringing. From what you've seen with, you know, for those that don't follow you closely on Twitter, John, you do an exceptional job of rating teams on their ability to retain USL professional minutes, the quality of them on a statistical level of how those players can potentially improve certain levels of function within a particular team, whether it's a defensive or an offensive benefit, and how that potentially shapes things. What is Jake LaCava the most exciting player that we have signed this year, or are your eyes potentially somewhere else at the moment with the way the Rowdies roster has built?
Yeah, in terms of the additions, I think it's the other Jake that has me really excited. In terms of Jake Armen coming over from Charlotte, he's a player who for the past year or two I've thought has been pretty exceptional with what he's done with the Independents. He's capable playing in the center midfield. He's capable playing as a wing back, and he did so exceptionally in the Charlotte 3-4-3 in this past season, which I think is indicative of the role he'll play with this Tampa side. What makes him special for me is the ability that he has as a creative player, where in those deeper wing back positions where, and just innately, you're farther away from the action, you're less likely to create. He has such a sharp vision. He can spot a run from a mile away. His passing range is really strong. He won't blow you away with the pace or the physicality, but at the same time, he's a very good dribbler. He's crafty in a way that lets him beat players pretty easily. I think his defensive work rate is strong as well. He's the kind of guy where there isn't a true weakness to the way he plays the game. And I think that in terms of the value he gives this team with the flexibility of their deployment of personnel. So Leo Fernandez, say, played a lot on that left side, where you could argue maybe that the defensive responsibility that comes with his role limits what he's doing in terms of the offensive side of things, where he, to me, is at his best. Suddenly, Jake Armen holds down that spot, absolutely nailed in. You can put Fernandez in those more attacking situations. So I think that applies with a lot of the acquisitions, LaCava and Armen specifically, where, yes, they're really talented, but what they do in terms of the roster build is almost equally important.
As far as, I mean, midfield and offense, Armen is, from what we've seen of him, has very much implemented very well with this team. We saw him in the FIU game play as in a 3-5-2 scenario. He played with Hilton as one of the paired defensive mids. In this most recent game with South Georgia, he played as an outside midfielder. So, it goes to show exactly what you were saying as far as the versatility that he certainly provides. And Neil's obviously kind of showing him around a little bit, seeing what kind of puzzle piece he can fit into this roster as far as how best to use him or the versatility that we've got. But that being said, as exciting as the midfield and some of the attacking players we've signed so far, I think everybody's big hesitation right now is the defense. and the big question mark with, of course, losing Forrest Lasso. This past weekend, and not announced by the Rowdies yet, Robert Castellanos was the center, starting center back, and played the center back during the game against South Georgia. We've been told that he's potentially coming on board. Of course, the team has not officially announced it as of yet. Is from your perspective, and John, you probably do more. Well, you certainly do way more watching over the rest of the league than the three of us, probably combined tenfold. But as it stands right now, like, let's just take the assumption that Castellanos is actually on the team. Is this defense a poor defense coming into this season? I mean, obviously, Rowdies have always been ranked high. We almost always probably will be ranked high by and large by most people. Is this a huge, huge problem for the Tampa Bay Rowdies right now?
I don't perceive it as such. Like, when you think about the fact that Evan Loro and Forrest Lasso, two of the best players to do it at their respective positions, are out the door, yeah, there's probably some level of regression. But in terms of, at least with Lasso to start off, if you're thinking about one of Timmy Mell or Castellanos is going to be taking up those minutes, right? Both of them, in terms of what they've done at the USL level, is anchor defenses that came under fire for 90 minutes. Castellanos was at the core of a pretty putrid RGV team, and nonetheless rated in the 99th percentile for the amount of defensive actions that he successfully completed, 90th percentile for the aerial wins that he got. I mean, talk about a Forrest Lasso comparison on that one. But Timmy Mell was pretty much the same thing with Loudon last year in a very similar scenario. So these are players who, in high pressure scenarios, when their teams are coming under fire in really dangerous counterattack kind of situations, can do it. They're both athletic, relatively strong physically. Again, like, no one is Forrest Lasso in that regard. I think between those two, and maybe it is some sort of platoon, maybe one of them really grabs the role by the scruff of their neck, you're going to have at least a decent simulacrum of what you were getting out of Lasso. And I think the retention of Aaron Guillen and Jordan Scarlett at those outside center back spots is just crucial, because really they're two of the best to do it at their position. I have Guillen slotted in as my defender of the year prediction. I think he's fantastic with what he does. So maybe the defense takes a half step back, but I don't think it'll be regression that's that noticeable. And I think they're probably still the best defense in the USL, if we're being honest.
All right. So final step on the Rowdies' journey for the roster for this season. I'm going to do a real quick hot take. Who do you think starts in net this upcoming weekend? Is it going to be CJ Cochran or Raico Rosarena?
My gut says Cochran, because I really liked what he did in OKC, but I have no idea.
Perfect. All right, so let's step away from the Rowdies here. Let's go ahead and start talking a little bit about the little bit of the East. Seems that the feeling around the league that I've seen, I know that you tend to concur with this, is that it's pretty much going to be the same big four teams that we've seen the last couple seasons. It'll be the Rowdies probably up there, Louisville, Pittsburgh, and Birmingham. As far as, let's really focus on the teams that are probably going to be Eastern Conference title contenders by the end of the season. Let's take those three teams, Louisville, Pittsburgh, and Birmingham. What are the biggest additions roster-wise or big changes that we've seen with those three teams coming into this season?
So I think the biggest move that any of those teams made would be Pittsburgh bringing in Dane Kelly at the striker spot. The reputation precedes him there. I mean, he's the all-time leader in USL goals. For a team that, for all of their talents, for all of the exceptional midfield talent they had last season, didn't really have a great finisher up top. Suddenly, you've got the best finisher to ever do it in this league. That's a big deal. at the same time, Denny Vitiello is gone from goal. Preston Kilvane is gone from the center back spot. Jordan Dover out at left back. So you've got a team where they're going to be super powered offensively. And Bob Lilly does have a way of pulling college kids out of a hat and turning them into a top five USL defense. But I think there's going to be an adjustment period there. In terms of Birmingham, Dan Kelly's Charlotte teammate, Enzo Martinez, something of a hothead, absolutely one of the best creators to do it in the USL. Really good from a deep position if you're trying to progress the ball and build up, but he can play higher up the pitch. I sort of envision him as like an inside forward kind of role where he's kind of just allowed to roam off the shoulder of the striker, pick up the ball in good positions and do what he wants with it, because that sort of free roaming thing is what he does best. And I think that'll be something to look out for in the Tampa matchup as well, just because that specific deployment can challenge a back three really effectively. Birmingham, the biggest thing for them, I would say, though, is losing Nico Brett as their striker. He was one of the best finishers in the USL last season. And much as Pittsburgh gained somebody at the spot, Birmingham's in the position this season where I don't really have confidence in somebody stepping up and scoring double-digit goals. I think it's going to be a lot of scoring by committee. That said, they've got the supporting unit to really put something together, and I think they're defensively underrated. Louisville's interesting because you almost feel like they don't care about the regular season at this point. They know they're going to be there at the end in the conference title game at a minimum, probably. The wrinkle for them right now is that they've got the injury to Cameron Lancaster at striker. No one really knows what the deal is in terms of the time he'll miss. The headliner for their offseason was signing three players from the Kansas City system. So that's Wilson Harris at striker, and he'll be the heir apparent to that spot for the foreseeable future at this point. Top 10 goal scorer in the league 2 years ago during the pandemic year. Solid pedigree. Enoch Musu-Galusa, who's going to be on that left wing for Louisville, is someone you have to watch out for. For me, probably the best dribbler in the USL, lightning quick, really rapid fire shot from distance, just an explosive player. And then Amadou Dia at left back. He's been in Phoenix. He's been elsewhere. He's a veteran presence. I think that the good dynamic that those three bring is that familiarity and chemistry with one another, where you start all three of them, you're plugging them next to guys like Paolo Di Piccolo, Corbin Bone, who are really smart soccer players. So there's three guys with chemistry next to a bunch of people who know how to get it done with whatever teammates they're with. Louisville's probably not going to miss a beat. They've had a couple of losses where they kind of cut ties with older players and brought in some youth, but Louis City is Louis City, so they're a threat.
Yeah, Birmingham's defense, it's interesting because it always flies under the radar, but when you've got like a solid core guys, right? You got Mikey Lopez, you got Alex Crognell, you got Jonathan Dean. Jonathan Dean, of course, being somebody that was kind of almost in the conversation for like a defensive player of the year type conversation, like performance last season, on the fringe at least of that conversation. Like, I mean, yeah, that's definitely a team that defensively I think flies under the radar. And for me, I think that was the team that scared me the most, just because I think for like a lot of folks, everybody expects Louisville to be good. Everybody expects Pitt to be good. But like Birmingham hasn't been around long enough to have that kind of a reputation yet. So like Birmingham for me, like the last couple seasons, has been the team that I've always been worried about, because it's hard to grade them. It's hard to judge them. It's hard to expect them at a certain level. So let's do a hot take. I know that your rankings a couple days ago that you went ahead and put out here, the final rankings, you had the Rowdies as the number one team out there, Louisville being number two for the Eastern Conference, of course, Pittsburgh and Birmingham. Are you sticking with that prediction here coming into the season after the last weekend of preseason action, or is there anything that you need to make an adjustment for?
No, I'm feeling pretty good about that top four. At least as a tier, I would bet good money that that is going to be the top four. You could maybe see some of those teams switching around. I do think Tampa is going to be the strongest of the bunch, but yeah.
Just because I know that Matt loves bringing this up. Indy 11, You know, they bring over Mark Lowry, right, as head coach. Yeah. Are they even good this year? Let's just throw it this way, because I know Matt loves ragging on them. So are they even good this year? Do you think he can turn that team around in a single season, or does he need more than one?
What did I do?
So I think the underrated thing is that they kind of had a dud of an offseason with the player acquisition, where they got a lot of bodies in there, and it's like four guys from Real Salt Lake, or the Real Monarchs, rather, who wore garbage last season. It's Meshack Jerome, who I adore as a center back, but he's on the wrong side of 30. It's a lot of role players, older players, who, yeah, they're fine, but they don't make a difference. So if you're thinking that they didn't really bolster the roster, what you're relying on is that regression to the performance level you had in the playoff season in 2019 and the Tyler Pascher going off year of 2020, hoping that last season was just everyone being really sick of Martin Rennie and then kind of not caring once he got fired and you were just going to the interim management. And I think there's a real chance that someone like a Neville Hackshaw, the Carl Wimette kind of player, really bounces back in a serious way where some of the sloppiness goes away. And from that point, you're just relying on the Mark Lowry system to generate goals from pressure, systematically create things where someone like Emmanuel Arteaga, who was maybe criminally underrated in terms of USL forwards, really shines. I have a tough time seeing them as anything more than like the team that sneaks into the seven seed as that last playoff team. But I do think that this is going to be a much more competitive Indy than we saw last season.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, I don't think it takes much for them to be more competitive than they were last season, if I'm going to go on Indy. And honestly, though, I do it out of like a little bit of love, because Indy's a team that, you know, we came up with in NASL and we've watched them turn themselves into a good team. I thought the hiring of Lowry was a great move. If they're trying to at least signal their intent to get back to what they were. But I felt the same way you did about some of their offseason signings, John. I saw some of the names coming in and I'm just like, I don't know. You know, you mentioned Meshack Jerome, like he's a guy that Lowry had in Jacksonville, but that was in 2015, yeah. 2016. Like that's.
It's Stefano Pino is the other one where he's 31 yeah. years old. Like, yeah, he was awesome in Miami in 2016, but I mean, that was so long ago.
Yeah, it's going to be, I don't even know if I want to say it's going to be interesting, but I mean, it's going to be something. And I don't know if it's going to be something they expect in the first year. I thought they would pull in maybe some higher caliber players. I was a little surprised by that. But we've talked about the Rowdies and we've talked about the Eastern Conference a little bit. Unfortunately, we're going to have to acknowledge the fact that the Western Conference exists, and including a team, Orange County, that we're going to see again, along with some other teams this year. I will admit to still not knowing a ton about the West or following too much about them. I mean, I think Reno's in for a great year this year out West. Maybe they can go up against Fresno in the Western Conference final. We'll see what happens out there. But I did get a little bit of a news this afternoon when USL put out their final like preseason power rankings, with Orange County on top, which admittedly, you win the title, you should get to start the next season on top of the power rankings, I guess. But I saw they signed Kubo Torres, which I think is going to be a pretty good signing for them. Who else looks good in the West? What do you expect to see happening out in the West this year? Besides Reno winning it all, of course.
So I think Orange County is a good place to start, because I have them missing the playoffs entirely at this point. Ooh. And Kubo Torres, he steals your attention with the name. And for me, the reference point is that run he had with Houston Dynamo going on a decade ago, where he just like came out of the gates on fire, really had a shout to get into the Mexican national team. On the sly, he scored 5 goals in 4 years at this point in his career. And from what I've heard from some Orange County people, it almost seems like he's more transitioning into like youth coaching in addition to being a striker. I don't know about his impact on the pitch necessarily. Meanwhile, this team lost Rob Kiernan, who was an anchor in defense for them. They're going to be relying on Kobe Henry a lot for minutes at the center back spot. And he's a U.S. youth international, but to play such a defensive style with a 19-year-old at the heart of your defense may be going to be hard over the course of a full season. The biggest thing is that Eric Calvillo is gone out of their midfield. He was my MVP of the playoffs. Absolutely crucial to what they did defensively out of that number 10 spot, where he could press up next to Ronaldo Damas. He could jump back next to that double pivot and really just shut down games. And he was so crucial to build up because he's an immaculate dribbler, just so vital in how you progress the ball up the pitch. He moved over to El Paso, who I think is another notable team in terms of what the Western Conference is going to be this year. Obviously, they had Mark Lowry leave, and they brought in John Hutchinson, who fairly unsuccessfully managed Seattle Sounders 2 a couple of years ago. But he's a bright manager. He plays a really high-pressing style. And El Paso, subtly, if Indy had a terrible offseason for acquisitions, El Paso was the opposite, where they raided Miami for Cristiano Francois. They brought in Nick Hines, who has been all over the league, but he's familiar with Hutchinson. Evan Newton will be their goalkeeper. Familiar, if you remember his time in Indy, he's really good. But I think if there's one team out west that people should be paying attention to at this point, it would be Sacramento. They've pretty much completely transformed their roster. In talking with people around that club, the sense is that things just really had gotten stale with everything that they had been doing. You think about like a Derek Formella, Cam Iwasa, some of the players who had been in that organization for a couple of years, they just didn't have the motivation. So this team signed Rodrigo Lopez, who was fringe All-Pro, Zico Lewis, who everyone would know from Charleston, just a dynamic creator, Matt LaGrassa, Nashville SC, made the step up to MLS fairly successfully. Trying to think of more names. They just added at every single position within that squad in a way that numerically my data absolutely adores and has them as a top three team in the league. And in terms of what that unit can do tactically, it's sort of the flexibility that I was talking about in reference to Tampa, where you've got so much depth, so many players with that level of versatility, that they can kind of be a chameleon that adapts to whatever challenge comes up. So I have them actually winning the conference at this point.
Okay. I had a little flashback there with Evan Newton. You talk about remembering him in India. I still remember two appearances for FC Tampa Bay back in 2011 when he was on loan.
Yes, sir. I was at both of those games actually.
Yeah. I remember Evan Newton. All right. So just kind of overall, we kind of hit on both conferences, and you've kind of hit my last one a little bit, but I just want to give you another chance to maybe squeeze any more names or teams in. Any teams that may be a surprise, good or bad, teams that might come out of nowhere to have a good season, or teams that you might expect to be better than they are going to turn out to be this year?
Yeah, I think if there's a team that really could surprise people this year, it's going to be FC Tulsa in the East. When you think about their roster last year, this was a very talented attack. Joaquin Rivas is a Cuban international. Guys like Rodrigo da Costa, Dario Suarez, proven quantities. They brought in JJ Williams, who he had done the job decently enough in Birmingham amidst a pretty crowded attacking spot. He's got some MLS pedigree. So you've just at least stayed level with what was already a strong attack. I had some good conversations with their GM, actually, who was kind of just DMing me out of the blue on Twitter, talking about how he thought their center backs were terrible last season. And so that was really what they were focusing on, which, like, yeah, by the way, just bizarre that he would just kind of come out and say that. But they did improve at the spot. They brought in Ronald Rodriguez, who's a Salvadoran international with like double-digit caps. I don't claim to watch a ton of Central American soccer, but he seems to be a pretty strong addition there. Petar Kujic from, again, the Kansas City system, who, let's be real, I guess KC has been kind of hot garbage for a couple of years, and what, they're in MLS Next Pro at this point. Kujic for me was someone who always stood out with a really good head on his shoulders. He can play as a defensive midfielder or as a center back. So they've put players in better positions there, added some depth. If they sort out the issues at the heart of that defense, and you've got Lebomuloto still in the middle of the pitch, you've got that really talented attacking band, it's easier for me to see how that team makes a leap up closer to the Birmingham-Pittsburgh tier of things, rather than the sort of muddy middle that you often see develop in the East.
All right, Dan, we know one of the reasons we wanted to get John to come on was to soothe your concerns over the changes in the Rowdies back line. Do you have any questions you wanted to throw out there about Tampa Bay before we let John go?
No, I think we covered that pretty early. I feel that very similar about after seeing the game on Saturday, that I feel pretty confident in our defense. I think we'll be a pretty solid team. But going before Saturday, I was very, very panicky. Probably lost some sleep over that.
All right. John, real quick before you run out of here, tell everyone where they can find you and find your stuff. You've got this giant season preview out there that is very good reading. I haven't gotten all the way through it yet, but I did go through and read the Rowdies parts system and make myself feel good about the season. Tell people where they can find you and where they can find all your stuff.
Yeah, very easy. Just at USL Tactics on Twitter. I have a link to my website there where I try to do about a blog post once a week or so just to kind of hit a topic in depth. I've got the off-season tracker I link to as well. The USL didn't do an off-season transaction thing this year for some reason. So me being the insane person I am decided that I was going to record every single move that every single team made. So that's out there if you're interested in that. I've also got projections up on that for every single player's performance this year in terms of percentile. So... that's a thing. But yeah, just at USL Tactics on Twitter would be the spot.
Thank God you did a tracker. I was so disappointed that the USL didn't do one. That made my head hurt. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't do that.
You're the league office who gets word of every single transaction. You'd think it would be the easiest thing in the world, but...
yeah,
well, here I am, like, scrolling through the New York Red Bulls 2 Twitter account, praying to God that I don't miss an announcement.
Yeah, right.
I will say, I would love to get the behind-the-scenes info on how that all gets rolled out. Because we've talked to some of the league media and leagues, like social media people before, and they always just would kind of say, look, we've got, like, a list ready to go out. We just have to be told. Yes for this one, yes for that one, yes. Like, I just want to see that whole process from start to finish. I guess that's the pending league and federation approval whenever someone shows up in the office to stamp a paper or something.
Yeah.
All right. I did get one quick question DM'd from one of our listeners thanking you for sharing your Twitter account info, but based on all the information you concoct and share with everybody, you don't have an OnlyFans yet people can subscribe to get this information.
I mean, if you want to slide into my DMs, we'll see what gives.
All right, John, thanks a lot. We will definitely have you back during this season, hopefully to commend you on how right you were with the Rowdies.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Yes, that is very much the hope.
All right, thank you guys.
John, good talking to you again.
Yeah, see you around.
See ya. That was fun.
As always.
As always. You know what else is always fun? A trip to Taco Bus, where they proudly deliver a healthy, fresh, authentic Mexican taste experience to our Florida fans. Just one bite of a burrito, tostada, or quesadilla, and your taste buds will be singing traditional Mexican folk songs. Visit them today at one of their 12 locations, and remember to keep it Chido. I'm not kidding you. I tweeted about this earlier. I have spring break coming up next week, and I literally have, I'll put it up here, like a booklet that I have like divided into days and all this stuff I need to do and stuff I want to do. Taco Bus is on like three of the pages. At least three times during this next upcoming week, I am going to find a way to get down to South Sarasota, well, kind of middle Sarasota and just south to me, and get some Taco Bus.
I support this.
And they support us even better.
I need to get to, like, I think it's Wesley Chapel and get the Taco Bus. I think they have a location up here by me, and I say that like it's not a still a 45 minute drive.
giant air quotes. I saw that.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to some league and club news. Like, really the only club news going on right now, like we talked about, was the apparent signing of Robert Castellanos. We said it in the pregame show last weekend, once we had been made aware of the news, that kind of the main point of that game was to A, no one get hurt, and B, let's see how he plays. Let's see how he slots in. And guys, I just want to get your takes. How did you feel about what you saw from Castellanos?
I don't think there was much to be seen in that game. I think he I'm assuming that was his first game with maybe a week of training under his belt, so I don't want to pat, like, you can't base too much on that, but he seemed to cover like Ian and Scarlett pretty well, was in the right places. I think the communication might be a little bit better going forward, but I'm pretty impressed.
The big question mark right now is going to be the air game and the aerial defense. And unfortunately, the goal that we allowed in against South Georgia was a set piece goal. Some of the goals that we've given up this preseason are set piece goals. And I don't know if Castellanos fills that gap in particular, but aside from that, there was nothing I was too overly concerned about. I thought his performance was just fine for a first big trot out for the Rowdies.
I just want to jump in about the set piece goal. It was kind of a fluky, weird goal like this on Saturday. Like, I don't think there's any fingers to point there. That was a very weird one. But I mean, yeah, set pieces seem to have been an issue going forward, but that was before we made this apparent signing. So I don't know. I think we're going to need to see where, if he gets some game time again, Birmingham or something, because he's brand new, right? Like to us. So how he fits in back there will be interesting, but it was kind of like getting a replacement teddy bear as a kid. Like, your mom like threw away your old one that got you through all the tough times, and then like you're upset, and then you just got like a replacement one. It's not the same, but it'll do. That's how I feel right now.
and speaking of, you know, being a young guy, I'm looking at some career stats and stuff here. First off, only 23. He'll turn 24 in May, so, you know, kind of early on in the season. This will be his sixth season as professional. Started out with Galaxy 2, then spent 3 years in RGV and in Nashville last year. Only had one appearance in MLS, started, played the whole 90 minutes. He's only played 54 games in a career and started 46. And if he's a guy that we think is going to slot in as the Lasso replacement, he's going to put a lot of miles on this year. So would expect to see him develop maybe at kind of a rapid pace during that time period. So we'll keep an eye out and see. One thing, and again, you know, kind of small sample size with his number of games, one of the things that Lasso brought to the team from time to time was goals off of set pieces, where he could get into it and get up and get the ball. Castellanos with 3 goals in his career so far, 3 goals in 5 years. So maybe not as productive, but who knows? I think we'll see. I think if he starts and plays is like the main starter in that spot this year, I think we'll see a different player at the end of the year than we're going to see at the very beginning.
I also want to do this now. He's not going to be Forrest Lasso.
No,
and I think we need to like just move on now, right? Like I love Forrest. He was a great servant to this club. He's done. He did so well for us. He's accomplished many things for us. We need to now push him out of our brain and look at what we have and focus on who's here. I don't think it's fair to anybody trying to fill that role to be compared to Lasso constantly. And I'm not saying anybody, like I'm not yelling at anybody or chastising anybody. I'm just saying, like, I think as fans, we need to immediately take that out of our head and look at what we have and not go, well, Forrest could have done this. Forrest would have done, I don't care. He's not here. So let's work on making this defense as stout as we can and maybe, you know, replicate, you know, a record setting clean sheet run.
You say that. Well, like me you say that like you're not chastising us in the DMs every day. Man, oh, man, oh, man. All this fake fronting.
That's different.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I just shouldn't point out that you can't spell Castellanos without Lasso.
I'm leaving.
I just had to pull up the page again to double check it and make sure it worked. I mean, he does have a beard. the other thing that I had thrown in here is with some league news, they dropped it today, knowing full well, I'm sure, that we'd be going on air tonight and giving us stuff to talk about. The league dropped their preseason power rankings. Again, Orange County on top. Will be interesting to see how that turns out based on John's predictions. May not last very long. Rowdy's in second. They did specifically mention the departures of Forrest Lasso and Evan Lauro, but expect that the foundation of the defense will continue to be what it has been the last few years. And then Louisville third. And Louisville, like I said, the big X factor with them is this Cameron Lancaster injury, which they just discussed a couple days ago. It's described as lengthy. Like, they didn't go full hockey term with it and go, like, upper body, lower body. It's like a leg injury, but didn't say, you know, any kind of, you know, vague description of it. Just said a lengthy period of time and that hopefully he'll be back as soon as possible.
I can't wrap my head. I understand that they are the league champion, but Orange County at no point last year were like near the top of the power rankings. If I recall, they kind of just squeaked into the play. I'm sorry. Power rankings are stupid and I hate them and I don't respect them.
I mean, they're not my favorite thing in the world, but they're good. They provide something fun to talk about at least.
Actually,
by the way, yeah. Castellanos, not on the roster page, but it has been updated with all the new profile picks, the new with the new home kits and everything from this year. Very spiffy.
One of the things about Orange County from last year, though, was the fact that they squeaked in the playoffs by points, but they stormed into it in form. And I think that's one of the interesting things about where John's prediction is having them having a very bad season or not. I mean, I say bad, but you know, a non-playoff team as he's showing right now. That's fascinating because they've coming into this season, they're on a heck of a streak. I mean, what is it like unbeaten in like 12 games or something like that? Like coming into this season, you know, like they ended on a heck of a form.
I throw all that stuff out at the end of the season. Like it's we're starting fresh.
Yeah, well, of course. But I mean, it's interesting, like the potential culture change there about what, like John's predicting that's going to have a major drop off. It's an interesting dichotomy compared to where they're coming into the season. So
I still hate them.
Yeah, of course.
Never forgive, never forget.
Last thing that they got announced also later this evening, someone thought it was a Friday instead of a Wednesday, I guess, and it's become the topic du jour on lower-level Twitter, lower-division Twitter. I don't know if that's an actual subsection of Twitter, but we're going to pretend like it is. Was San Diego Loyal signing former Atlanta United two player Andrew Carlton. I guess what, he was on loan for Indy for a while too. Didn't he score a goal that got us in the playoffs at one point because of someone they beat? Carlton kind of maybe more well known lately for his participation in events in Washington around January 6th of last year, and his public statements for it. So any thoughts on that?
Yeah. He is what, 21 years old?
Yeah.
He's 21. He's a young kid. That doesn't excuse any of the behavior. I listened to briefly San Diego's podcast with Landon Donovan, where he was just like, well, I had talks and like, we've acknowledged what he's done. He's acknowledged what he's done, blah, blah, blah. And I get that. But I think the mistakes that Landon Donovan is alluding to are kind of big. And I'm not saying don't forgive him. I think if there was growth, I think as a semi-public figure, there needs to be a public acknowledgement of that and a discussion. It doesn't need to be, just stay off Twitter and don't post anything political and keep your mouth shut for now. Like, that's not growth, right? Like, I think if you're going to give somebody a second chance, there has to be, growth has to be shown. Is that a statement from him or?
So 30 minutes ago, San Diego Loyal did put out a club statement. I'll go ahead and just read it out because it's fairly short. Andrew Carlton understands the opportunity in front of him and acknowledges his mistakes from the past. He's excited to be a part of this community, represent the values of our club, and help bring a championship home to San Diego.
Okay,
I would have preferred that coming from him directly rather than through the club, but that is a 30-minute-old statement as at the time of this podcast.
I'm also going to say this, though. San Diego and Landon Donovan is the club that forfeited points that almost lost them, or that did lose them a playoff spot, if I recall, for walking off the pitch for a homophobic slur being used on the field. Great. That's amazing. Progressive. Great. But then to do this and not give, how is he going to fit in the locker room culture? Like, that is something that's going to be an issue going forward. I would like those statements to be coming from him directly and not the PR, like a watered down PR version from the club.
Absolutely.
But I mean, I'm at his age, I'm okay with a second chance. But there has to be growth, has to be shown, and that's where I'm at on it.
Yeah, San Diego, of course, will be coming to Al Lang on April 30th. So we'll see what happens. I think the best description I saw that, because I saw that same statement, it was as part of a quote tweet that said, they act like he got a DUI 10 years ago instead of participating in an insurrection last year.
Right. Like, I mean, and this is not like, it's weird because it was just on my first tweet is from USL Memes, quote tweeting the statement, or the local statement, and it's Carlton on Twitter retweeting in October some more stuff. So it's like, it doesn't seem that growth is there, it's
on that one.
Oh yeah.
I thought you were talking about. We still memes on sometime. We have USL tactics. We just the whole USL account family there.
I don't think this is going to work. I think my problem here is it is obviously a soccer move, and that's fine. I get it. They're a club that wants to win and do these things. But to have these mental gymnastics on why they signed him and whatever, when there's obviously public evidence that his views and everything haven't changed. And it's not political views. You can be a conservative and play soccer. I that's fine. I'm not saying you always have to agree with me. I think there's some basic human decency that could be, and in participating in an insurrection is not exactly the greatest career, shouldn't be the best career move. So I don't think he's learned, and I think Landon Donovan's going to end up with a foot in his mouth by the end of this season. It's going to suck. Not really, because I don't like San Diego, but it's going to be fun watching them implode from the outside.
Especially on April 30th.
Yes.
All right. So this would be the time. Now, Stephen, I know you said this is the last show of the preseason. I'm officially counting it as the first show of the new season because we've got an actual preview to do, which will take all of about 13 seconds because there's not a whole lot to go over it. We're playing Birmingham on Sunday at 5 p.m. Not only is it a weird day, but it's a weird time for the Birmingham is coached still by a guy whose name I still can't pronounce correctly, probably Tom Soane, maybe. Birmingham's last game, they lost to the Rowdies 1-0 in the 2021 Eastern Conference semifinals. The last meeting between these two, that was the same. There's really nothing else to go on about with them except that this will be their first regular season game in the new Protective Stadium, which is a college football stadium on the, I believe it's on the campus of University of Alabama, Birmingham. I was doing a little look into it over the weekend. It's also home for like the Alabama State High School Athletic Association football playoffs. They've had a couple preseason games there. You know, I know there were some issues with the pitch and with you know, just infrastructure and logistics and whatever at their old stadium, but like at least it was a soccer stadium. I mean, this is new. It's shiny. It's clean. It's whatever, but it's soccer happening in a football stadium. I mean, it looks like a smaller version of the New England Revolution playing at Gillette Stadium. So, I don't know. I am going to be talking to, we're going to be done here shortly. I'm going to be talking in a few minutes with Kaylor Hodges from the Birmingham, I think it's Hammer Down podcast, for a little feature we're going to have on the website and also some more exclusive content for our Patreon contributors. So if you would like to get some of that info, if you're thinking about traveling to this game this weekend and want to get kind of the lowdown on what else to do in Birmingham, because there might actually be stuff.
There's nothing. Don't even bother. Go to the Piggly Wiggly. Go to the Piggly Wiggly. Pick up a 6-pack of Steel Reserve and call it a day in the parking lot, because that's about as good as you're going to get in Alabama.
But I'm going to try and get kind of like the scoop from him, like any tips for the stadium and all that kind of stuff. If you're not going to the games this weekend, there's all kinds of watch parties going on around Tampa Bay. You've got the club is hosting one, teamed up with Visit Tampa Bay. They're hosting it at the Garrison Tavern on Water Street in downtown Tampa. That'll be kind of fun. They're going to be raffling off, I think, like season tickets and a chance to win a signed jersey or something there. Ralph's Mob will be at Corrigan's across from glorious Al Lang Stadium. Skyway Casuals will be at the Shamrock Pub in downtown Sarasota. I will be at the Shamrock. I had entertained the idea for a little bit of recreating my Super Bowl setup and putting the TV out in the backyard and watching it from there. But I'm like, hell no, it's Sunday. It's 5 o'clock. It's spring break. I'm off for a whole week. I'm going down to the pub. Gentlemen, where are you guys both going to be at Corrigan's? What's your plans? Oh, Dan, you said you're like just coming back from the other coast. So you're going to be at home.
I don't know. I mean, Casey's flight leaves at 10 a.m. and then I got to drive all the way back from like Orlando Airport. And it wouldn't be so. I would probably go straight to Corrigan's if I didn't have the puppy demon with me. So I have to drive all the way up here and then I'd have to drive like another hour down south. So it really depends on how much driving I feel like doing on Sunday. But I will not guarantee my presence at any of the watch parties. But I want to also say, finally, the Rowdies are creating a presence across the bridge. That's something that hasn't been there for a while. So a watch party, you know, in Tampa is kind of a big thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, if I'm there this weekend, it's because kickoff is at 5 o'clock, right? Five Eastern. I will be there for maybe 30 minutes because I got a game myself I'm playing in at 7. So, yeah.
Where's your dedication to the Rowdies? Where's your dedication to the Rowdies?
Yeah, I know. Where is it? It's just, man, man, Steven just questioning everything about Steven now, right?
There was a slight chance, and maybe there still is. I'm not 100% sure. There was a slight chance that I was going to be actually participating in a outdoor/indoor soccer tournament on Sunday that runs from 1 to 4. There's a local charter school had a roller hockey rink outside that they've converted to a soccer pitch. They left the walls up all around it. They just put the pitch down on that, and there's going to be a tournament going on there. I don't know if we ever actually got signed up for it or not, but I did acquire some shoes just in case, but I don't know if that's going to be a thing. But I will be, either way, I will be at the Shamrock on Sunday. So if you're south of the Skyway or just feel like driving for some odd reason, come on over. We'll hang out and watch the game. We got anything else? I don't know if we have. I think we have anything else.
I think we're good.
I think so. Well, yeah. I don't know if we're good. I think we're done. I'm never going
to
say
I have anything else. I don't think I have anything else to say about Alabama. I think I'm good. I think I got it out. I think we're okay.
All right.
Keep an eye on the website and the social feeds. I just want to throw that in real quick because we're going to have a slightly edited version of my conversation with Kaylor going up on the website probably on Saturday since it's a Sunday game. We're going to have a match preview. I believe I'm going to be able to participate in the media call, which is going to be coming up, and I'll put some highlights from that stuff in there. We're making an effort to put some stuff on the site this year. Oh, you know what we could do? That other thing that I had mentioned in the DMs, and we'll just throw it out there. Why not? There were a couple messages I sent, so maybe that. So we have been trying for a while to get someone more astute than the three of us at discussing, analyzing, breaking down tactics to kind of break down do some like tactical reviews of the games. If you're interested in doing that, whoever you may be, write something up for this game on Sunday. We'll use it as an audition. Send it on over to us. You can just DM me on Twitter or for an email address or send me something like that. Send me something and we'll take a look at it and decide what we want to do and we'll be in touch. So open call for contributors. Talk about tactics because you know we got to save we got to save Steven and the tactics board for the pregame show, so we don't want to burn him out too much of that, showing where the convoys get stuck in the midfield and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, if you're interested in doing that, we'd like to have that. We want to bring the website back. Like it's been there, but we want to populate it with some stuff.
All right, so we're at the end of the show. We have a first game coming up this weekend. Let's do the quick fire hot take score predictions for this upcoming weekend. Dan, I'm going to start with you first. How do you think the season opener will go this weekend for the Rowdies?
I want to say a 2-2 draw.
I literally know nothing about Birmingham other than they don't have Junior Flemings anymore. They do still have, as far as I remember, Bruno Lapa. That being said, 3-1 to the lads.
Oh, you guys are going to hate me. I'm going to.
Gonna?
So
you assume you've done already.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually think the Legion take this 2-1.
Because you won't be there watching it. That's why.
Yeah. If we lose, it's all Steven's fault for predicting it and then not watching it.
Like, how is Steven not like going to the game to begin with? Like, you drove to like freaking Seattle for an Open Cup game. You can't get to Birmingham for an actual league game, a game that really matters.
I have people counting on me to be there on Sunday night. I can't. I wish I could go. I want to go. But
it's called Ralph's Mob and the Skyway Casuals and all the other rowdy supporters. We're counting on you to be there Sunday night. And by there, I mean Protective Stadium in Birmingham, Alabama.
I wish.
Plenty of great seats available. It's a football stadium.
I know.
If it was an Open Cup game, you'd be there.
No.
The Open Cup game, you'd already be there right now, like on location.
I know. Like, if it was an Open Cup game, Steven would be tailgating starting, like, last weekend. He'd be, you know, with his little foil Open Cup or something. I don't know. Do they even award a trophy for that stupid tournament?
We had it at the tailgate for Luba, right? It's a 3D printed that was the Asterix Cup.
All right. Well, we love yous for the show. I think it goes without saying, John Morrissey, thank you for joining us tonight on the last show of the preseason, first show of the regular season. Gotta love the time of year. Guys, a couple days later, and it actually starts to count for something. Thank you to Wolfface for the intro music that you provide. Radio St. Pete Online for this great platform to do our show live. Shamrock Pub and Corrigan's, thank you for the opportunities to do live shows on location. If you are listening, share us with friends. Subscribe to the channel that you're listening to. Rate and review the show. All of that helps us get Rowdy's coverage to people that want to listen to it. So every little bit definitely helps. If you want to support the show on an additional level, Patreon is the number one place to go. For $1 a month, the best way to support the show is through Patreon. You can go up to $10 a month for the executive producer. Like we said earlier in the show, David Morales is the executive producer for tonight. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and cookie-cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, and you are looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, a Sunday league squad, the adult, or even a pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. All right, everybody. Well, have a great night. Again, you'll be many watch parties galore this upcoming weekend, Tampa, Sarasota, and in St. Pete. So make sure you are following all of that to get the locations, the times, and everything else down. And we'll see you out there. With that, go Rowdies. The Rowdies are near.